My guest at this time is former Oklahoma Senator Dr. Tom Coburn. He served 6 years in the House and 10 years in the Senate before retiring in 2015. He is also the author of the brand new book, Smashing the D.C. Monopoly, Using Article 5 to Restore Freedom and Stop Runaway Government. In the first half of our conversation, which I hope that you've heard at this point, Dr. Coburn explained why the process in Washington is effectively broken and why future generations are burdened by the refusal of our current lawmakers to make difficult decisions. And instead, they're more interested in careerism and in accumulating more power for themselves. For our next few minutes, Dr. Coburn and I are going to be discussing the Convention of the States, what it is, and why it could be one of the last best opportunities for America to regain some of its fiscal and governmental sanity. And Dr. Coburn, thanks as always for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Most people, I think, before this movement started, were only aware of one way to change the Constitution, and that was through the Congress, two-thirds in both houses, and then three-quarters of the states ratifying those amendments. The Convention of the States, as laid out in Article 5 of the Constitution, says that a convention can be called when two-thirds of the states ask to do so. Now, the math is a little tricky because it's either 33 or 34. Are you allowed to round up, or do you have to have 34 to get this underway?
You have to have 34 to actually apply and have the, force the Congress to seat an amendments convention of the states. But it's very specific in terms of the jurisprudence that's come before. And before our constitutional convention, everything was decided through a convention like this. And so you have to have an application that what call aggregates. In other words, it has to be the same application everywhere. You can't have one application for a balanced budget, one application for something else, one application. You have to have 34 that say the same thing. And we say three things. We think the federal government ought to be fiscally responsible. They ought to have to live under the same accounting guidelines everybody else does, and they ought to have to live within their means.
Does that mean a balanced budget amendment?
That's a balanced budget amendment, but it also means you can't just go and do mandates to the states to balance the budget. You have to make hard choices. Second thing is you have to limit the scope and jurisdiction of the federal government. There was a case by the name of Filburn in the 1930s where an Ohio wheat farmer grew 18 acres more wheat than what he was allotted. But he used every bit of it to feed his own cattle, his own family, and use it for seed the next year. The federal government said that's interstate commerce because you didn't buy that 18 acres worth of wheat from somewhere else. So they expanded the Commerce Clause, and that's what has allowed the federal government to tell every state in almost everything they do now what to do. So limiting scope and jurisdiction is very important if we, in fact, want to make the decision where we actually have some power. And that's at the state level. I can go talk to my state representatives. It's hard for most people to get in to see their federal elected representative or their senator. It's hard. So now we move power decision-making back to the states on the issues that affect us interstate. We're not talking about a revolution. We're talking about restoring what the original intent was of our founders in terms of federalism. And then finally, limit the terms of both appointed and elected officials. You know, prior to a Supreme Court ruling in 1994, 26 states had limited the terms of their members of Congress. And an Arkansas case, which the Supreme Court decided that we as citizens can't decide whether or not we want to limit the terms of our federal representatives. Well, that's ludicrous. So what you would do is pass an amendment that puts a limit on the amount of time people can serve.
Let's talk about some of the logistical aspects of this. So 34 states are needed for this to get underway. How many are in right now, and how many do you think you can get?
Well, I feel 100% confidence we'll get 34 because it's not a right or a left issue. It's a freedom issue. Number two, we have 12 that have passed this already. I think we'll get 10 to 12 this next year, and probably after that we'll probably get 10 to 12 the next year. So probably in the next 2 to 3 years, the Congress will be seating an amendments convention of the states. And if they don't, here's why they won't. Because they'll see this coming and they'll say, hey, the people want a balanced budget amendment. The people want term limits. The people want a limited federal government and an expanded state government. The people want that. Remember, there's polling out there now that says 84% of the American people don't trust the federal government. That's a dangerous thing for us as Americans. Because if that's a true poll, that means that they've already lost the authority with which they were given. And when you quit trusting the central authority, then you no longer will follow its will. And that's called anarchy. So we have to take back our freedom. We have to reestablish the rule of law and make sure it's followed, but also it has to have the integrity of the central government in terms of a limited federal government.
What about a potential time crunch here, Dr. Coburn? We don't know what will happen in 2018, for example, but usually the midterms don't go super well for the party that controls most of what's happening in Washington, and in this case, the Republicans control both houses of Congress and the White House. You mentioned earlier that this shouldn't be a partisan thing, but for the most part, it seems right now it's mostly conservatives pushing for a convention of the states. So is it important to get this underway before the midterms?
Oh, I don't really think it matters because none of it's decided in Washington. It's all decided at the state level, and all it requires right now is if you think of it in a partisan fashion, it only requires 24 seats to change hands for the Republicans to control both houses of the state legislatures in 38 states.
Wow!
Of all those representatives in state senate, all it requires is 24. So, this really shouldn't be a partisan issue, because if you ask somebody that's hard left who should decide, they'll say, I should decide. And except now we have unelected bureaucrats deciding that are out of control. The Congress doesn't even control.
These are tough choices. Are you confident that the people either named to this convention or the state legislators involved in establishing the convention are ready to make those tough choices?
I think so. And remember, a lot of the states, for example, Indiana, said if you don't follow exactly the instructions that you're given, it's a felony punishable by time in prison if you're one of our representatives at an amendments convention. So, this is going to be totally under control. It's going to be limited to its scope. It's going to aggregate. And what's going to happen is these are just recommendations to go back to the states. And then you have 7 years to pass them. So if people really don't want a balanced budget amendment, and they want us to decline like every other Republican history, then just don't support this kind of stuff.
Two quick questions before we let you go. You mentioned the balanced budget amendment. I remember, I believe this was pretty early on during your time in the House, that it passed the House and came one vote short in the Senate. And as far as I know, it never came up for a vote again. Is that accurate? And if so, why?
Well, it's accurate. Sure, it's accurate, because they don't want to balance the budget, because then they have to make hard choices. Then they have to be accountable to their electorate. And if the electorate doesn't like the choices that they made, they'll replace them. So it's an insurance policy. If I don't have to have a balanced budget, the easiest thing in the world is to spend somebody else's money, Greg. And that's what they do every day. They spend our grandchildren's money, because we're certainly not spending our own right now.
Last question, and we'll let you go. I don't want to make this sound too dramatic, Dr. Coburn, but is this a last chance to get this right constitutionally, or is the window a little more open than that?
I don't know. There's never been a country that was the reserve currency that's done what we've done. We now have a total debt to GDP of about 140%. There's never been a country that survived that. So the question is, Do we have the moral turpitude or moral structure with which to make these hard decisions for the future, or do we just let this train continue to run out of control down the mountain? And that's the real question. So if you love your kids, you love your country, and you love your future, you ought to be about choking down the federal government and having it live within its means, lessening its impact on the economy so that the economy can actually grow. Greg, we are now number 17 in the world in terms of economic freedom. For 200 years, we were number one. So we've moved from number one to 17 because we have a government that chokes down the ability of people to start a business, grow a business, and expand a business.
Well, Dr. Coburn, you mentioned the swelling of the movement. I know just from the folks that I've talked to that it's a very popular concept in many different parts of our population. So we look forward to visiting with you as the effort continues in the weeks and months ahead. Thank you very much for your time today, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Yeah, former Oklahoma Senator Dr. Tom Coburn, I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.